Red Cow Arcade.
Okay, normally when I do this podcast, it's EJ, but, you know, this EJ character, I'll read you the exact text that I got. So it's always this moving target, he and I. You know, we schedule time together to do this. We try to do, you know, because we try to release for Fridays, but it's become more of a production now, so I try to actually record on Thursdays. Tomorrow night's going to be a hectic night. I don't want to be recording tomorrow night going into Saturday. We'll talk more about that in a moment.
Yep.
So I said, hey, you want to do it tonight? He said, yeah, sure. And then right when we were setting up, he goes, actually, I'm not feeling great. I think I need to go to bed early.
Just like that. Gone.
EJ is a man of boundaries, if nothing else. He's very
he'll let you know.
He's very
right
generous
there.
Of spirit. He'll give you a lot of his time. But when he's like, I don't feel well, goodbye. So I said,
you guys have a lot of trouble like scheduling this and getting it like, is it just the nature of having kids and the evenings are just difficult?
I mean, at this point, we only do it once every 2 weeks. So Nina has like pretty much signed up wholesale for like, I'll do bedtime that night. And I can always make up for it by doing bedtime some other night. So it kind of works.
Yep.
But so I thought about it for a minute and I said, well, what should I do? I should, you know, I really should record something. And I actually considered, John, recording a solo podcast.
A monocast. A monocast,
having a camera about things that are interesting to me. And then I said, of course, John would be the next up. That would be ideal. But you've felt ill lately.
I have. I've had this nasty cold that, you know, I've been tested twice now. I did an at-home and I did a rapid response. And it's not COVID. It's just it's either flu or something. Just got a terrible cough.
I don't want to be this guy. I don't want to be the guy who's like, but did you get a PCR? Because everybody does that to me. But have you gotten a PCR?
I did not get a PCR.
I've heard from people who said I didn't test positive until my symptoms went away with a PCR.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe I should. I mean, I don't know that it really matters. I'm starting to feel better now. So... and I mean, I haven't gone to work. I haven't gone out anywhere except I have to go grocery shopping one day. So I don't know. I didn't have like some of the classic symptoms. You know, I never lost taste or smell, which even during a normal cold, I usually lose, but I haven't
so it was
this
all
time.
Coughing and discomfort. I didn't.
Yeah. Never any fever. So, you know,
I live in fear of pneumonia after having it the one time because it was the thing that lingered on for 3 or 4 months and it can cause real issues to have, you know, walking pneumonia as they call it.
Yeah, I mean, that's still so like crazy that you couldn't even know, you know, something's just wrong.
I went to the doctor and they were like, of course, this was before COVID, but they were like, here, have some cough syrup just to make you comfortable. It'll go away. For some reason, they didn't want to x-ray me at the time, but it took COVID to get me x-rayed. So we were, as of this recording, last weekend we said we should shoot some Box Max. We should get the band back together again with EJ and stuff. And then you were feeling unwell. Now I don't know but we have a planned shoot for Saturday. It'd be nice if we can do it. If not, you know, hey, that's we'll be like EJ about it. We'll be like, I don't feel well. Goodbye.
I mean, I feel like I could do it. I felt like I could do it last week too, like I had said. But I understand people still want to be cautious, and I get the kind of social stigma around having a cough. I feel like when I was out, you know, like shopping, whenever I coughed, I got 1,000 stares at me. You know, it's still people are hypersensitive about it for some reason.
About
you know,
before it's, COVID, you cough to cover a fart, and now you fart to cover a cough.
it's a good one. I
was thinking about it, and I was like, well, you know, if there's a high likelihood that I would catch a cold from moving forward with this. Because it didn't even occur to me that, like, if you were saying you tested negative for COVID, I was like, okay, he doesn't have COVID.
Yeah.
But I was like, I haven't gotten a cold in 2 years. I don't want a goddamn cold.
Let me tell you, it sucks. It really sucks. I had I didn't have tissues anywhere in the house because I haven't needed them for 2 years. You know, all of my cold medicine was 2 years out of date. You know, it was just like they're just awful. People just say, "Oh, it's just a cold." No, they suck.
You got it from,
it's just miserable.
From work, probably.
No, I think my sister had a birthday party for her son, and my other sister's kids came, and one friend came. It was a pretty small gathering, but I think I got it there. That would be my guess.
Yeah, well, it was Zach who dropped out first. He was like, oh, I think I'll pass. And then, I think my and EJ's concern was more like if you had that kind of – I don't really hear it in your voice right now. But if you had that kind of cold vocal fry thing going on, and we have like five episodes where it's like these are the sick episodes.
Yeah, like last Saturday it was much more fry. It was all in the throat then. It was just all throat pain. And now it's just all in the chest. And that's it's kind of moved out of the throat. So voice-wise, I'm like 90% back, you know.
Have you thought about if we do episodes, have you thought about what you want to do?
For actual content? My God, no. I mean, I am concerned about the state of the Hall of Max. I have not evaluated it for expiredness in a while.
I think we should put it out of mind. Let's not look at the expiration dates because it's just going to cause problems. Yeah.
It's just going to cause pain.
Yeah. That's what I say.
Just eat the food and say it's terrible, even if it's the best Mac ever and it's just 6 years old.
I don't know
it's
if
fine.
Six yeah. years old. But yeah, I mean no. The joke Shouldn't I was going to make, two. Should this come up, which I expected this would come up, was like we just did a Junk's Cart at a store that was like, buy our 3 year old food.
Yes. Exactly. And I've been enjoying that 3 year old.
And you've gone back to that place, that Creative Options place?
Yes. I've gone back a couple times.
What do you get?
I got a really nice, big, like a 5 pound bag of chicken breast. I did buy another box of that Chex. I got some ramen there. I got just a few different things like that. Mostly grocery stuff. You know, I haven't bought anything else there. I got some snacks for work. You know, like not for myself even, just like they had big boxes of pretzels for $1. And there's like 12 bags of pretzels. And I just put them in like a big bowl at the office for people to like just, you know, have a pretzel. I don't even care for them that much. But just to like welcome people back a little bit. You know?
I ran the New Bedford half marathon a couple weekends ago. And it's a significant half marathon in as much as it's in this area. It's one of the, you know, I don't know where it's ranked in the nation for half marathons and for road races. But it's pretty big. It's like 2,000 runners. You know, yeah.
Wow.
It's like a big event. It's and that's quadruple the biggest thing I did last year. So,
wow.
You know, it's they could easily develop it into a marathon and have it be like a big Boston qualifier or something like that. So it's a cool route. You probably know it. It's like you start in the historic district and you go down like King's Highway past the old Cinema 140 and then you go past Buttonwood, past the Cove and then back into the city. That's basically it. And so I was like unconcerned because I've been running so well and I was running very well for 11 miles and I hit, you know, people talk about this wall that you can hit and I've never experienced anything quite like this. So I've been sick at the end of runs. I've been like unrecoverable at the end of, I've had like trouble at the end of runs. This was different. This was, I had decided not to eat very much leading into the day, lest I have GI issues, because this is always a concern, especially on a long run. And I think I just didn't fuel. I think I didn't. So so I was running a 7:14 pace about for 11 miles, which is very fast.
It's pretty fast. And very fast.
Then all of a sudden I got sleepy.
Oh,
yeah. Like actually sleepy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just basically had to crawl to the finish line. I mean, I think my final pace was 8:08. It like slowed me down by 13-14 minutes or something. But it was crazy. And then I was also cold. I couldn't regulate my body temperature. I was really cold, and I was craving something like with a lot of fat in it, or something with a lot of sugar in it. Either one.
Yeah.
So we went to I got in the car. I blasted the heat. And we went to Mirasol's and I got their like grilled cheese thing and I got like two chocolate chip cookies and I just ate them like they were going to save my life. It was crazy. Yeah. It was like how much I want. Like I don't remember craving food like that ever. And then, yeah, it took like two or 3 days for me to kind of sleep and, you know, my muscles were really achy and it was really crazy. Like people who run longer distances like that, they bring these gels that you're supposed to eat during it. But I wasn't that well prepared. And I still figured, I was like, it's not a marathon. I've done half marathons and you get through it. It's like, you know, you're only talking about an hour and 40 minutes or something, but you can do damage in an hour and 40 minutes.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. I'm glad it wasn't more serious. You know, you didn't have like, you know, collapse or something.
I've got this thing about like never push it, you know, past 80%, like always give it 80%.
Yeah. Yep.
So I also, knowing that we need to fill some content, it's always whenever there's kind of a content gap, I always. And by the way, did you see that EJ got to do some Bickford's content for our Bickford's show? Yeah,
I did not.
Our show is a little thin on the Bickford's.
Yeah, it was.
You guys
my
got
fault,
up there and you were like, "I got sick once," and then everybody stopped talking.
Yeah, nobody wanted to say anything.
So EJ was like, oh, I have a Bickford's location that's now a Hooters in West Springfield. And so he shot like a second half of it, which was really fun.
Oh, very cool.
It just kind of bolstered it. And I do have, I don't know if I've talked to you about this yet. I think this would be really awesome. I want to go to the North Attleboro CompuServe. CompUSA, excuse me. The old North Attleboro CompUSA, if we can figure out what building that even was. I want to bring my dad, and we will tell you the story about buying our first ever video editor.
That sounds like a lot of fun. HP. You know, and you bought it all there, like the whole setup.
Well, he didn't know anything, so he went to. Yep. He was like, "This seems like a very reputable place," and he went to CompUSA, and he said, "Like, give me something that's capable of like video." Which it was 1999, so they were like, "Ah."
Yep.
And you know, they gave us something with like a video card, you know, like I think an advanced video card, and I think 25 gig hard drives.
Yep, it seems about right for the time.
You know the story. Francois Dampierre partitioned it to an NT partition just for video editing, and an XP partition just for internet browsing. And but anyway, I think it'd be really fun to bring my dad and talk about like the amount of struggles that we had
I was just driving by another CompUSA location that we used to go to, in Warwick, Rhode Island. Remember, we'd go to the CCRI computer fairs.
Where to do those? And then kind of sort of.
They don't do them at CCRI anymore, but pre-pandemic there was still a computer fair, one left by that same company called Kogan Fairs, out in Connecticut, which I thought would be really fun to do, to go visit and see what they're like. I mean, I can't imagine they're anything like what they used to be. They used to be like kind of amazing spectacles of computer technology.
Really, I think I went to two or three of them and it was amazing.
Yeah, those ones at CCRI where those massive spaces are just jam-packed with people
sell some porn and stuff.
Oh yeah, there was like XXX, and you know you'd have the folio of CDs, and it would be like over 18 only, that kind of stuff. You know, I couldn't care less. Like we have the internet, you know. But
I was like 15 and 14, but yeah, and I remember them selling like emulators and ROMs too. Like
Yeah.
I mean, I guess much like a Comic Con where they sell bootlegs of the Star Wars and that sort of thing. It's not super policed.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's an opportunity. I look at it as an opportunity to, is there content that I've ever wanted to make that I've, felt like I couldn't schedule in. And so I had this thought of like, wouldn't it be cool to do basically the opposite of No Views, react to a scene from cinema history that I think really, really works. And, maybe we'll call the series, Scenes That Work or something. And so I chose the Ride of the Rohirrim when the horses show up in Return of the King. And mostly I talk about how in post-production they really attend to the characters in that scene. They're really like they're giving you character information and how people respond and react to everything that's going on. And it's what kind of propels the scene.
Yep.
But yeah, it was cool. The reason I always was hesitant to do it was because I knew that there would be copyright problems. with YouTube, mm-hmm. but if you just keep cutting, if you pause frequently enough and you still frame frequently enough, you can, you know, it. But what one thing I did learn that was kind of interesting was if you full screen, so like if you play a lot of audio from something, it's going to get that right away. Yeah. It seems to get audio quicker than it gets video, but it does get video matches too. So if you just have muted video and you let that play, and then you cut from a full screen to like a cropped half screen of you reacting to it, mm-hmm. they still recognize that as continuous if there's no if you in no way jump cut it. It was just pretty impressive.
Interesting.
They can ID match it. But yeah, I think so that's gonna drop on Sunday, and I think it's really fun. It's just like a little course in filmmaking, kind of.
Yeah, that sounds super fun. And I can certainly understand your concern about, you know, getting the content in there. And it's great that you were able to get a visual representation of the scene and the commentary without triggering the YouTube bots.
I just did it here in my arcade studio and just recorded it really quickly.
This is a very nice looking set, by the way, that you have here. You know, you guys both have really, you know, great looking setups. I've never had the opportunity to kind of say it, but it looks really good.
You know, I wonder, we could totally set up your, like, if you have an inactive DSLR, you could have a little live via John from the lab upstairs.
Oh yeah, I definitely could. I mean, I barely used my, the 7D, you know, which was good enough.
Yeah.
Could definitely get that set up.
Used to use that more often when like EJ wasn't around and stuff, but now we've got multiple DSLRs.
Yeah, there's more than enough.
Yeah, I would like that. Pewtersmith is on my list of priorities.
Well, that show was so, the problem with it show is it's so tough to shoot, you know? I mean, it was really rewarding. I love the way those episodes come out, but it was so kind of intensive to shoot. You know, we got one a day kind of thing. I really enjoyed it, but I understand.
You sacrifice several weeks of content, basically, and I think that's okay because people like them and they live forever. And the last time we did it, we both took Fridays off, and that would work again. We could just take a Friday off.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And you know, we did Pewtersmith Bites, Bits and Bites.
I actually love those. Those are one of my favorite things to do because I've got a lot of just interesting standalone pieces that I could point out for a minute or two, or you know, something to talk about. I think those are a lot of fun.
That's what we'll do. So we should do that soon. If you were to do one of those, do you have any thoughts on what you would do?
I'll have to give it a little thought. I mean, I certainly have a lot of projects. I had actually bought something with mind to make a Pewtersmith out of it, though I'm not sure it was a great idea. I bought a computer that they knew had a mouse nest in it, like a really cheap.
Oh, yeah.
It was only like $40. And I opened it up just to kind of assess the condition, and it was pretty bad. So that was one thought, but it might be too bad for TV kind of thing. You know, it might be. Yes. But I mean, I'm sure I can find other, you know, cool stuff. I have all kinds of projects. Just got to sort through and think of something that would be kind of visually interesting.
Well, on the topic of arcades. So Arcade 1UP sells another product line. They sell lots of, like, they do pinballs, they do cocktail tables. So if you've ever seen, like, the Pac-Man cocktail tables at, like, a pizza joint or something, they do that, but smaller for the home. But they do these, the one thing I was always like, oh, maybe, because I'm very done with my arcades, but I was like, maybe, was these counter arcades. And so they're, like, a foot and a half tall and like a foot wide. Mm-hmm. They come pre-assembled and they're the same games basically. So you can get Marvel, you can get Pac-Man, you can get Turtles, Mortal Kombat, you know, a lot of the same ones. And they come pre-packaged with like four games, you know. So like the Pac-Man one comes with Dig Dug, Rally X, Super Pac-Man, etc. And but they were always, honestly, for what you're getting, they were too expensive. They were like $250 or something for like this kind of dumb little thing. But Kohl's last week and a number of other retailers that carry them sold them for like $130. And I was like, you know, I have to go into the office sometimes now. And I had before I bought them for my house before COVID, I had half a mind to buy one for the office. Like I just thought it'd be super cool to have like an arcade we could all walk up to.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool vibe for your workspace.
Just a little bit of that startup bullshit, just for just to let everybody know that, like, we're not saving lives here. And so I bit the bullet and I bought I bought Super Pac-Man and I bought Marvel Superheroes, and they're really cute. They sound really the mm-hmm. sound is actually really strong. The controls yep. are way nicer than the ones that come packaged for these. I don't know why.
Really?
Maybe it's just because they're next. Maybe the next gen ones are better than what I've got here. Like maybe the Simpsons one is better.
Yeah.
Yep. But my thought too was like, on a number of occasions, I've wanted to bring one over to your house for Christmas parties and that kind of thing. And I've been like, well, now I could just bring one of the counter kids because they're super easy to transport, and the Marvel ones, two players. I'm sure you can mod them too.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm sure. There must be a modding community around that. But that sounds really awesome. You know, kind of like a similar experience, but just portable.
Make it movable. I heard Matt is in Italy.
He is, yes. He just arrived there, I think, last night, and he's staying there for a couple weeks.
He was like, just so you know, I'm in Italy. And I was like,
okay, just so you know. Well, he's going to visit his father, you know.
He said he was like, we should do a jump start in Italy. And I was like, you know, I think we should aspire to it. I think before we all die, we'll go to, because at least we have an inn with Matt. Do you know specifically where he even goes? Is it Italy?
Italy. Italy. His grandfather's house in Italy.
So on the topic of putting children to bed.
Yes.
We were doing this thing for a little while where, I don't know if you've ever been to the Tiverton Library up the street from my house.
I haven't. It always looks like such a beautiful building. And I've always kind of wanted to stop in, but I've never done it.
$25 for the year for an out-of-stater, because I'm in Massachusetts. Yeah.
Really?
You get the whole... And then it was like, for $100, you get like this massive library of audiobooks. Like, don't get an Audible account. Get a library card, is what I'm learning. But yes, it's a very nice facility. The only thing is they're like the last ones to like give up on the COVID thing for some reason.
Yeah, they're super, kind of, even now, still it's like very regulatory.
It's a librarian thing. You're not a fucking hospital.
I mean, at this point, the last holdout for places that were still requiring masks was Chinese buffets. Mm-hmm. And now even they've gone.
Yeah. I should tell they don't require them there. Anymore. I'm like, hey. Even the Chinese buffets have not.
Even the Chinese buffets. excuse me.
So anyway, so we started going there and we would pick out three books. And Gloria is the kind of, I don't know if there's any listeners who are like her, but she's the kind of person that kind of wants to like have somebody talk to her as she falls asleep. And so we were doing for the longest time, for years, we were doing like three little books. And then she always asks for a story afterwards. We started doing Shel Silverstein poems for a while, which were normally she would fade off to one of those. But then I was just like, why am I not just reading her chapter books? And I actually attempted during Christmas time to read her Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol.
Holy cow. Talk about your dry content.
It gets her to sleep, man. Yeah.
Really? Well, it would, wouldn't it? I mean, it is, you know, 1800s literature.
So then I was like, she's really... Yeah, I'd say she's really into Mario. She plays Mario 3D World with me a lot. She's watched a lot of the original cartoons with me. She loves Mario Maker. She's crazy about Mario Maker. Really, any game that doesn't have a bad guy is what she doesn't want to fight bad guys. Yeah. If she encounters a bad guy, she like throws the controller to me. I said like, oh, like a storybook for Mario would be cool. Yeah. So then I'm like, I like look on Amazon for a second, and it's all there's the closest that there's like a golden book that's like, this is Bowser, this is a Goomba, this is Princess Peach, goodbye. And that's, you know, it's got some colorful drawings, and that's it. And I was like, there's no like in-depth Mario story. And when we were growing up, the shows were these kind of, there was like a more of a narrative to the Mushroom Kingdom.
Yeah. Mario. I wouldn't call it, you know, an amazing piece of screenwriting, but there was definitely a narrative.
And so I was like, I was like, what am I remembering? Well, didn't I read a Mario book when I was a kid?
I seem to remember one. Like, it was more substantive than that. You know, it had like a little bit of story to me.
I was like, I know what it was. I had Choose Your Own Adventure Mario books, Nintendo books. Yes. And they had Zelda ones too, by the way.
I never heard of
these. Doesn't it capture your imagination? Where you're like, of course.
Yeah. It does. I mean, I always loved Choose Your Own Adventure books. It was like one of my favorite types of books when I was, you know, fourth.
So I go on eBay and like Amazon Marketplace, and they're all like $50 for one of these things.
Of course, nostalgia is reigning king.
Plus, like, everything is very expensive. Like, everything costs tons of money right now.
Yeah,
and and I know one of the first things I noticed was that all of them have, like, or most of them have, like, the Pringles logo on them. So, and I looked into it. It's like it was a Pringles promotion. Yeah, Pringles and Nintendo joined up and made these fucking.
That is a bizarre collaboration.
Now, I don't know if most choose your own. So I got two of them. I got like a Luigi one and a Yoshi one. And
yep.
And it's not. It's interesting because the narrative content of it is doesn't quite follow the animated series, but it doesn't quite follow the games. It's like it's kind of its own thing a little bit. Like huh. They're like the king of the Mushroom Kingdom, princess's father, is like featured prominently, for instance. You know, he's not really in anything. Or like Yoshi can't talk in it, which is more akin to the game. Huh. But in the show, he could talk. So it's kind of its own thing. But remind me, when you read Choose Your Own Adventure books when you were a kid, did they also have Highlights for Kids style activities in them?
No, never. It was always just a story right. Where you went through the sequence and got to an ending.
These
and that
do.
Was it.
So the way it works is that you... If you follow paths that, so you do like crossword puzzles or you do like mazes or whatever, and you can sort of accrue points. And in the back, they have like a scorekeeper. And so you, yep. And you know, so you'll get to parts of it where you're like, if you have the wrench, you can go to page whatever. But if you don't have the wrench, you got to do this or, you know, and if you have enough, you know, Mario collects 50 points for turning off the radio or whatever. It's pretty cute. And so we've been reading those and she's been cracking up and she's really smart, obviously. Yeah. So she'll be like, Dad, let's do this. Let's read.
Yeah.
Let's like make all the good decisions and then let's purposefully go make all the bad decisions.
Explore the narrative. Yeah. That's really cool.
I did buy two $50 yep. Mario books, but you know, they only get more collectible, don't they?
It certainly seems to be the case, you know, along those lines, you know, I've pretty much completed my collection of computers that I wanted, barring a few really rare stuff. But the prices now have just gone, you know, they're double of what I paid, you know, during the pandemic, not even that long ago. And you can't find anything.
I haven't been able to wrap my head around this where there was a lot of I heard that during especially during lockdowns, 2020 lockdowns. People, because they were stuck in homes and they needed entertainment, there was like yet another retro gaming boom, like yet another, you know, because like it's already insane. Yeah. But it was like PS2 games were flying off the shelves all of a sudden. And I was like, that's so strange. Like, I get it. Maybe you have a PS2 that you're dusting off. Maybe you find a little bit of extra interest. But if you ever go, like, if you have a Switch, you have a PS4. You go onto their online store, you can download $5 crap all day and have a blast and never run out of games. Like, I enjoy going backwards as well, but I wouldn't go backwards because I was bored. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
Well, I think that for a lot of people, gaming is what gaming was to them when they were a teenager, right? And they don't want to deal with the new experience at all. You know, people like tend to not move on from that certain period of gaming and they just want to go back to what they understood. You know, I think that's a lot of what nostalgia is.
Well, I'll be talking about plenty of that today.
So,
well, maybe that's a good time. I've got like lots of video game talk to do.
Yeah.
So on that same note, I've been buying. here's the series of events. I tell Gloria the Hobbit story to go to bed. She becomes interested in Lord of the Rings. We watch the goddamn Lord of the Rings trilogy. Yes, we watched the whole trilogy. She becomes.
That's a little. Is it? I don't remember if it's a little rough for her age. It seems like it might be, but I don't know. Is
it? It's
pretty rough. It's PG-13.
There's aspects
right?
of it that really did freak her out, and there's other aspects that I thought would freak her out, like Gollum, that she actually like really took a liking to. But she. Oh, and then like the ending of Return of the King, when we finally got to that, when you know basically Frodo decides to like euthanize himself, she was very sick. Like, because that movie, unlike a lot of movies, it's like unflinching in its emotion. It just has this kind of terribly sad ending, and it doesn't cut it with a joke. It barely even has dialogue. It's just people who love each other weeping. you know, and like to a 4-year-old, like, oh, she picks up on that. She's like,
it's very raw. Yeah. You know?
It's pretty powerful. It's a great movie through and through, but when I was watching that scene, I was like, maybe that's why it won the Oscar, like right here. Cause this is pretty, this does cut deeper than most fantasy movies will ever hope to. So anyway, she said, do they have a Lord of the Rings game? They actually do have a SNES game. We talked about that last time, and it is god awful. It's kind of
a
point and click DOS type of game.
Yeah.
Then I said, well, actually, I have a Return of the King GameCube game. And then she's like, let's play it. So then I had to kind of like, I have two Wiis. I have one downstairs and one upstairs, but I only have one Wavebird, and Wavebird's really the only thing I want to play GameCube on, because of course Wii plays GameCube games. And then, like, the Wiimote is required to boot the GameCube. Yeah, and the Wiimote drains batteries when it's idle. So, like, you're always changing batteries. So, this is kind of like this hellish experience. But once you put it back in service, then it's, like, open for business again. Like, you're like, oh, I could play games on this again.
I'm going to open the store.
So, I said, well, while we're here. Because she was like, oh, what about Mario Galaxy 2? Because she really likes Mario Galaxy 1. So we bought Mario Galaxy 2 for Wii. I've always loved Wave Race for N64. It's like water skiing thing. Yeah. And I became aware a couple of years ago that there's a GameCube version of it. And I was like, oh, I'd like to try that. So I didn't know that. So I bought Wave Race for GameCube, and it's quite good. There's a GameCube game called Beautiful Joe. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of that. That's one of those like title people hold in reference.
Yeah, it's like one of the favorites of, and then I think it had sequels on the PS2, but it's a Capcom beat 'em up, and it's a pretty like novel one, because it's movie themed. It's a guy who was at the movies, a monster came through the movie screen, captured his girlfriend, and now he becomes the superhero that's in the movie, and so the whole thing's like a film reel, and the main mechanic of it, which is really neat, is you can use the left trigger to slow the action down and like get in hits like while you're in slow-mo, mm-hmm. and you can use the right to fast forward basically. And so you can get through a part really, you know, and you can use like fast forward and slow to mess with platforms. And it's pretty neat.
That's cool.
It's got cool music and it's got just a cool vibe, a cool, like very cell shaded art style that kind of like that Wind Waker popularized at the time. And, what else did I buy? Have I got them all at that point? Yeah, maybe. I bought two towers because I didn't have two towers. I bought New Super Mario Brothers Wii because I remember liking that one, but I started playing it. I was like, God, this is generic crap. But I bring it up because I bring all of these up because everybody knows that GameCube right now is very collectible and has gotten really expensive. You're talking about like $60 games a lot of the time. I'm going to go to the flea market and see popular GameCube titles, like getting like a Mario Sunshine or whatever. It's pretty expensive. And Facebook always advertises Amazon listings for GameCube games to me. And I click them sometimes and they're like $100, $110. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Here's the thing. This is what I want to talk to you about. eBay is different.
eBay is different. Like,
the same
what do you
games
mean?
That go for $99 on an Amazon listing that I would see for $70 at the flea market go for $27 on eBay.
Yeah, I mean the problem is a lack of scarcity. Yeah. You know, that's the issue. I mean the prices on eBay are very driven by supply, right? And when you have the whole all of America to draw on, suddenly you have a lot more supply as opposed to the guy at the flea market who, you know, you try to find a local copy of one of those games and you don't think to go to eBay, you're going to have a heck of a time finding it because there's just not that many around.
Yeah, I remember a time. Well, I mean, first of all, like, why shouldn't that same principle apply to Amazon Marketplace? Maybe because people regard it like
because people don't actually like for Amazon Marketplace. It's not a big marketplace. It's a pretty small area of selling, especially for used goods like that. So I think it's a lot of just gouging over there. That's what it seems to be.
Yep. And then two, it's like I remember a time when the flea market had to had to price and value stuff based on eBay, and that seems to have gone away.
Yeah, I think that for some reason people really shun eBay, and I don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why you, if you weren't looking for, if you, you know, it's the biggest marketplace for used goods in the world.
It got kind of a Craigslist slime on it at some point, and now it's hard to shake that, I guess.
It is. I mean, there's certainly, like, when I bought, because I bought a large amount of my vintage computer stuff from there, and you get some junk, you know, you get some stuff that the shipping is atrocious, the condition is awful, but eBay's got really good return policies, so it's never been that big of an issue, you know? You just got to take advantage of them. You got to actually deal with it.
Their web experience hasn't matured much. That's the other aspect to it. Like, it doesn't have the same polish that you would expect from, like, a web 2.5...
I mean, I'm probably partially to blame for that, because every time they try a new feature and I tell them, you know, they ask for feedback, I'm like, just change it back to how it was, please. Because it's never better. You know, it's one of my biggest pet peeves in technology today is iterating the UI for the sake of iterating the UI. Fair. If you actually have, like, an improvement to make, I'm all for it. If you're just changing it to piss me off, you're just pissing me off.
I mean, I that's some very old man behavior, first of all.
It absolutely is.
Second of all.
I acknowledge I'm an old man. I'm getting there, you know. I'm on the road.
What I find is that, yeah, I become really familiar with the UI for a long time. But then as my brain's firmware updates with what everything else is doing, I then, when I go back to sites that haven't kind of, like, kept up with the trends, I then find myself, like, falling into my default habits for other sites. And I'm like, how come this site's not? Mm-hmm. Like, if you know...
Can you give me an example for eBay about what you find about the UI that is kind of disjointedly old?
That's a good question. I think it's like it's a very busy site, first of all. Like, it doesn't seem to direct your attention to what you're looking for. It has kind of an AliExpress sort of feel to me, where Amazon doesn't feel quite so. If you know, like, when you're on an Amazon listing, an Amazon listing is quite busy too at this point, but.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's something about it. Maybe it's also like the kind of the white and the color and the you know, like, their logo.
Yeah, just the palette.
Yeah, there's something that feels like you know, like the Space Jam website to me or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, websites with white backgrounds are very out of style. You know, I can't think of any other than Twitter, which, you know, tries to maintain that look. Facebook doesn't do it. You know. You know, basically no
Facebook
one does
has
anymore.
A white background, but they have a banner, right? Well, oh, yeah, you're right.
Facebook was a lot of gray now.
It's a white header with it, and then it's a gray background. And then there's boxes.
A lot of grays.
Yeah. Yep.
Gray is very in vogue, and I like that, actually. You know, I just recently got a new phone. I got a Pixel 6 Pro. One of the big changes I've noticed is that everything is now dark background. Everything's gray background in the UI, when you're browsing the web and everything. And it's partially because it looks nice, but it's also partially because it saves a ton of battery on the screen now. So it's like it's dual purpose. So I'm all about that. You know, I like the grays.
So I'm having a lot of fun stepping, you know, it's of course I could pirate these games very easily too. But you know, with like modded Wii's, but there is something really fun. I have to, even though I just poo-pooed the people from 2020, or I didn't poo-poo them, but I didn't understand the people from 2020. But I do get, like, buying an old game as though it's buying a new game is kind of a fun little experience. I've done that with Wii U as well.
Well, it's playing into that very particular piece of nostalgia, which is like the driving home with a game in your hands.
And in my case, these are games I just have never played. Like. It's as though, you know, it's like I'm just kind of getting around now to some of these.
Yeah, borrowing a moment from what could have been you buying.
Now,
it
what's
then,
fun about all this emulation that we do all the time now is, you know, because of course we've had NES games and SNES games at our fingertips for a long time, but there's something about my portable and there's something about the arcade and of course having a child that drives you towards, like, okay, what have I not played yet? I now consume, you know, this NES Drunk and Sega Lord X and you know, those YouTube channels are very useful for curation. So I'm always playing new stuff that I've never played before. And I don't know if I've ever asked you, how do you feel about the NES?
The NES? I loved it. I mean, it is my second favorite of the retro gaming systems after SNES.
You want two
SNES.
Excellent NES recommendations that you probably have never played before?
Absolutely.
Okay, one of them is called Journey to Silius. Have you heard of it? Mm-hmm. I think
not.
Sunsoft might be my favorite publisher for the NES.
I kind of agree with you. They have some amazing games.
So they have that Batman
really
game
cool.
I love. They have, I don't think I told you, but I bought like like 10 Light Zapper games for the NES that I'd never played before because I have the CRT from Junt SNES. It's really good technology. Like, it works so well. And I like that there's no crosshair, and so it's like that much more satisfying when you need it. But there are all these arcade shooter games for the NES that like have it all over Duck Hunt. Like, Duck Hunt's great. These are way better.
Yeah, I mean, most of the problem is that almost for that cool accessory, the only game that most people ever played was Duck Hunt.
Because everybody had the accessory, all they needed was the additional game. So maybe it was hard to justify $50 purchases, $60 purchases for games that are really limited.
Yes. And the people look at what Duck Hunt was and they said, do I want to pay $50 for a game that's basically going to be a variation of this?
It would have been cool to, they should have done more double carts, you know, like you get a platformer and you get a Light Zapper game in the same.
Yeah, or kind of games that integrated them together in some way, either by alternating levels. You know, I don't know that there were any games that were like that. Were there any that you know of where you did some platforming and some light game action?
Good question. I know of a few games that the Light Zapper was optional. So you could play it with the controller. Did you know that, have you heard of the game Smash TV? It's an arcade game and it came to NES and stuff. Did you know that you can plug in two NES controllers? Because in the arcade, it was twin sticks. So you were controlling two characters at once that were shooting everything. Because it's like a top-down shooter. On the NES, you can plug in two NES controllers. You can turn them vertically and you can use both D-pads vertically.
That is super cool. I have never heard of that. I didn't know that that was a possibility. All these little That's things super cool.
pop up. So anyway, Journey to Silius is a Sunsoft game. It's brutally hard. And so I recommend playing it with ROM saves or cheats. But it has, and Sunsoft had amazing soundtracks. It's the same person who wrote the music for Batman. And it plays really well. It's pretty short. It's pretty exciting. The boss battles are brutal. Just a good game. And it comes with, if you have Switch and you have the NES, you know, online service or whatever, you can actually, they included it in that, which is unusual for like third party games. So highly recommend that just as even just the soundtrack, honestly, it's just a great soundtrack.
Now
the next one is a more serious recommendation because I really love it. And I'm going to go into a little bit of depth about why I love it. Sure. Felix the Cat.
I've heard of it. I've seen some playing of it. I know it's fairly rare cartridge. Is it?
I don't know.
I
feel like I saw a YouTube video recently that talked about that was like, this is a good platformer that not a lot of people collect for, so maybe pick it up or whatever. I actually don't know. But it's Hudson Soft. Yeah. And here's how it works. So it's your fairly standard platformer, but if you remember the Felix the Cat cartoon show.
I do.
Felix has a bag of tricks, and the bag of tricks have chaotic abilities and skills. So lends perfectly to a video game platformer, and the art style is very like it. You know, it just feels it's somehow like rudimentary 1920s animation that just fits right at home on the NES. The soundtrack's nothing to write home about, but the game mechanics are great because there are little Felix the Cat. Items, little faces of his, like coins, basically. If you get 10, a heart drops. You have to collect the heart. You don't just automatically get it. But if you get that heart, you get a power up. So you go from your like a base ability, which might be like his standard base ability is to punch. He has like a robot punching like boxing glove. And then you get one where he has a top hat and a magician's wand, and he can attack with that. So it's a little bit of a short range item. And then if you do another 10 and get another heart, he is in a bumper car, and the bumper car is a little bit longer range. And then his fourth ability finally is a tank, and that's longer range. So you get longer and longer range, attacks. And you, as long as you don't get hit, you keep these power ups. And then if you continue to get hearts, you get more one ups. They just are one ups from there, but that's not all. Because there's water levels and there's flying levels. And the water levels and the flying levels both have their own unique series of power-ups. So there's a lot of game variety for an NES game. There's 8 worlds, I want to say. You know, it's not quite the same level of adventure and dynamic as a Mario 3 or something. It does, you know, but it's pretty damn good. Like, it, you know, we talked about our top 20 NES games last time we did a podcast. And I'm like, you know, Felix belongs in there, man. It's a really fun time. If you just want like a, and it's like, Journey to Silius is like this too. It's just the difficulty ruins these games a lot of the time. And yeah. Felix doesn't have this problem. It's the perfect.
Oh, that's really good.
I would liken it to maybe Kirby's Adventure levels of difficulty.
Which is reasonable, but not, you know, excessive, certainly. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's just a really clever little use of the NES, I would say. And then, like, they have bags of tricks, like, way up in the sky. And so if you can find those are, like, they have power-ups galore, so you can kind of, you know. And then when you have your final battle, they give you tons of power-ups so that you, all you have to do is kind of, like, maintain them for a few seconds because you're getting kind of rained on by attacks. It's a fun game. And I have it playing in the background right there, as a matter of fact.
Oh, very cool.
Kirby. A new Kirby game came out last week.
Did it? Oh, yeah, I heard about this. I you know, I haven't really followed new Kirby games in forever because I don't have the system anymore.
Well, this one's
anymore.
Unique because they've been kind of, you know, you might characterize Kirby as like kind of like Star Fox, where there's a really good Game Boy game. Then there was a really good Game Boy sequel, actually, which I think the Game Boy sequel, Kirby's Dream Land 2, I think that came.
Yeah,
I didn't either until recently. It's super good.
Yeah, I actually did play it. I played that. Oh, really? I really loved it. I love the first one. I love the second one. Those are.
I think Kirby's Adventure is better for NES, but they're both really good. They have that was the first time you get the copy ability, and then I kind of feel like after that, there's like a GameCube racing one. There's an SNES one that's okay. Yeah. There's I don't know. Yeah. I feel like Kirby didn't really like evolve that much since then, but this seems to be the first time that they're doing a 3D platformer that is exactly in the style of Kirby's Adventure. It's just a 3D platformer, and I don't remember what it's called. Kirby and the Lost Something.
Yeah,
but I started playing it with Gloria, of course. And what's awesome about it is that Kirby can swallow and copy abilities from ridiculous things, like you can. One of the first things that happens is you swallow like an entire car, like a massive car, and he has to like stretch his mouth to fit over, and it doesn't quite fit over the whole thing. But then you drive around as a goddamn car. And
just, like, sounds
like,
great.
There's like staircases, and you swallow the whole staircase, and then you become just like a walking staircase, and then you have to position the staircase, and then like lose the ability so you can climb it. And one of the things that struck me about it the most was, if you've played like the Game Boy one, you know instantly how to play this game. There's no learning curve whatsoever. Yeah. It's like, it may be one of the most perfect translations from 2D to 3D I've ever played. It's just abundantly clear, like down to the buttons. You're like, yeah, B sucks stuff up, right? Down to, you know, copies ability. It's just, it's really quite good.
Yeah.
But it's very, very, very cool. Easy. I mean, it's ridiculously easy, but I like that. Because I get a little tired of these, like retro-inspired $5 games that are fun but too hard. The too hard thing. Fuck off with the too hard thing. What is this?
I guess people think that they like challenge. I mean, I guess some people do. Those games seem to do all right, but sometimes I just want to relax. Have a nice time.
There was a. Have you heard the Bruce Willis news?
Yeah, he's retiring due to aphasia.
So some kind of dementia.
Is that what it is?
And there was speculation that that was the case. So you probably haven't seen this, but Red Letter Media did a deep dive, and a few other articles did too, showing that he has been running this kind of I pause to call it scam, but he has been starring in an obscene number of straight to Redbox titles. Yes.
Really? I think this is like barely on the surface of my knowledge. I think I've heard about some of these and I've seen clips and I'm like, what is this?
You know, like
this?
The old Roger Corman model of filmmaking, which is like pump it out, spend some money on a star, but not on anything else. You know, like it's that, but for Redbox, and it's, you know, and the people who use Redbox are Bruce Willis age, and they'll watch anything with Bruce Willis in it. And
these are
movies that cost $1.3 million to make, and they pay Bruce $1 million. And so he makes $1 million, and they'll do it occasionally. They'll do it with like Luke Wilson, or it's kind of, they call them geezer teasers, because the box has some age star on it, and then like they're not really in the movie. They get like a film student to make the film. I mean, the films are, yeah, like one of the funniest things about them is that like you can tell that Bruce Willis, they had Bruce Willis's attention for about 4 hours to get every shot, and they had like, so there's shots that should be achievable with him, you know, but they had to do it on green screen just to get it shot. And so anyway, so it was like, what's he doing? Like, where's his integrity? And now, of course, you find out that he was probably just kind of making like a final last ditch effort before he loses, you know, his cognitive abilities.
Yeah.
But on a similar note, there was an article going around all week that Nicolas Cage also has been in a lot of straight to VOD type content. And of course, Nicolas Cage, highly memed. But I thought what struck me as interesting was, because where you're like Bruce Willis, the work that he was doing is like the definition of phoned in. I mean, it's like comically phoned in.
Like, well, there were reports of people having to like feed him lines, you know, continuously through the whole thing, you know.
Yeah, and his line deliveries are all over the place. I mean, it's just until you watch some of these clips, you don't know how bad it really is. If you're like, isn't this an A-list movie star? What the fuck am I watching?
It feels kind of bad. It does feel bad.
But Nick Cage was apparently in a ton of debt. He says, he's like, well, I had to put my mother in a nursing home. There's something about his mom going to a mental institution or something. I don't know what that's got to do with wiping out the finances of a multi-million dollar A-list actor.
A lot of people have to deal with this problem. Is like, you know,
I had to spend it all, millions. But he did a lot of movies for the money, is what he's saying, and to pay his debts, and he's now debt free. And in these articles, he was like, I just want everybody to know that even though I did it for cynical reasons, I never phoned it in. And I really
is that true? That
concept of like, at some point, this guy said, filmmaking is going to have to be a job for me for a little while. It's not going to be about artistic satisfaction. And, but since they're paying me, I'm going to give them their money's worth.
Yeah. I think that's a great philosophy to have, you know, if you're going to, you know, if you want to maintain some integrity in your career, I think that is the absolute best way to go.
And he said a few times it really worked out, like this Mandy movie. I haven't seen it, but it's that one that the mac and cheese is from that we got, that weird, like goblin cheese or whatever. That supposedly is a really good horror movie. And it was just one of his many I need to make money type movies, and it turned out to be kind of critically acclaimed. So, you know, hey, it's all about what you put in, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, this is going to interest you. I got some home repairs that had to happen. We may have to like repeat this conversation on Box Mac. But you know how refrigerators are supposed to be cold?
Oh, yes.
So mine stopped being. It's the white one that was in my kitchen. And it had been there since well before we moved in. I don't really know how old it was, but old. And, my sodas were just getting, like, warmer.
Yeah. And, it's a bad sign.
So, Tuesday night, we're recording this Thursday. Tuesday night, we ran out, bought a new fridge. They had the one that we wanted in stock, which was a miracle.
Yep.
Because right now, especially like the special order fridges.
Good luck.
You're talking about like 7 months.
Yeah, you know, 9 months. Yeah.
They delivered it today. I got a new fridge.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Just like that.
So what did I get in a fridge, you might ask?
I am interested to see what you got in a fridge.
This Nina character that you've heard so much about.
Yeah. I know her.
She doesn't want nice things. She rejects.
No? Know?
She's like, no, I want. You know, because my first thing was like, oh, here's our chance to get an ice maker and water.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
And she's like, oh, there's going to be a filter involved. And I was like, well.
One filter to change once a month? Yeah, okay. I mean,
is it once a month? That sucks.
A very small amount of work. Yeah. It's once every 3 months. Four times a year, you can do it.
And then she was like, well, I don't want the freezer on the bottom anymore because Gloria, I would like for Gloria to be able to get to stuff. And I was like, okay, that's fair. And then I was like, what about, like, I was like, I'd like to do stainless steel. And she was like, no, it's going to look dumb because we have a white stove. I was like, well, replace the white stove. It's an old stove. And I said, let's buy the one that let's know where we're going.
Yeah, buy for the future, not for the past.
And she's like, I don't know. I think it's going to look dumb in our country kitchen. I said, so what do you want? She's like, I want an $800 white refrigerator where I have to fill up the ice cube trays. And I was like, what the fuck?
Look, I'm kind of a little with her, you know, and let me tell you why. It's because those new fridges have really poor reliability ratings. And on average, they last for 7 years. Yeah. And then you have to get another one.
I think we ended up spending like $2,600, something like that.
Hopefully yours will last longer.
We went to Lowe's and bought it there. First, we went to Best Buy. Because we've always like walked around the appliance area of Best Buy and was like, who buys these?
Yeah.
And so we were like, maybe it could be us. And of course, one of the constraints, and technically, you know, we could have worked around this, but we wanted to have something that fit the current fixture that are, so we, it was, yeah. it had to be smaller than 33 inches wide. But we ended up with something that we both liked. And now that it's in, we both really like it, which is, it's the side-by-side. So the freezer is on the left and the fridge is on the right. So freezer opens this way, fridge opens that way. The fridge is a little bit bigger than the freezer. It goes all the way down, obviously. And so that means, we can stock Gloria's stuff towards the bottom and she can just open the fridge and grab like a chocolate milk, which is cool.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
And what else? It does have water. And I was finally able to convince her about ice when we talked about crushed ice. Because she was like, I'd like to have crushed ice.
Let me tell you, I buy bagged ice. And let me tell you what a pain in the ass
you didn't
that
go
is.
for an ice maker when you redid your kitchen?
I use the same fridge that's been in here since my fridge is model year 2004.
Right,
fridge.
You have kind of a boxy white fridge. That's right. So if that thing breaks, what are you getting? Have you thought about this?
Yeah, I'd like to get something with ice and water for sure. But I have a weird restriction too, because the fridge, if you remember, in my kitchen is right up against that wall, so the door can't exceed the area of the fridge. Like when you open your fridge doors, they open out and push outside of the frame of the fridge, and all new fridges seem to do that. So it's a major kind of problem unless I want a door that opens like into the kitchen, like the opposite way, which would kind of suck because then you're like on the wrong side. So that's been the big problem. The solution is I can get like a 30-inch fridge, which has enough room that I can just flick them over, which is probably fine. I'll probably end up doing.
Well, there were lots
like that,
of good 30-inch options, they all seem to be less deep than the one that we used to have. So we got back a couple of inches in the kitchen area as a result.
Yeah, I mean the depth you don't really need it, you know, unless you got to store a whole lot of stuff in your fridge. You know, you end up way in the back and you can't find what you're.
I can tell you when you first open it, you're like, "Ooh, this is gonna be cramped. I'm not gonna be able to fit anything in here." And then you start to realize that like it's actually fine.
Yeah, it's got plenty of
I mean, of course, they had Alexas and they had, you know, digital displays for your family and all this crap. And you can put it,
ridiculous. Put I it don't on need the that
for some reason.
I don't think
I don't think that. So either, especially in a world where you can buy portable versions of that kind of stuff. And, you know,
just stick it out in the top of the fridge, you know, if you need.
Yeah,
an
Alexa. building things like that into your car or into your fridge, it just feels like.
I don't really, you know, I don't approve. You know, I don't see the need for that in our lives. Like the microwaves with Alexa built in. I don't get it.
Yeah, at a certain point,
it's just a promotional
tool. It feels like
status
or something. Yeah, because it certainly doesn't make things more convenient. Because if that thing breaks, there's no repairing it, or there's you're stuck in that broken state forever. But that's not all.
Then,
so we have Gem Plumbing and Heating.
They installed my.
I think you recommended them, and then they did our mini splits as well.
Yep.
So because of the mini splits, we went with a $20 a month plan with them, where they would come and look at various things in our house. And I think we actually upgraded the plan because then we had them redo our tub, and there was a few other things. And so. Nina was like, oh, by the way, Gem is coming. You know, this is like on Tuesday. She's like, oh, Gem's going to be here. And I said, oh, okay. I said, why? Because I work from home. And she was like, for the mini splits. So they come over. I'm like, all right, there's four units. The condenser's in the back. I'll be in the office if you need me. And the guy's like, I'm here for the boiler. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, let me show you to the boiler. So for those who don't know, we live in Westport. We live in this, you know, small town. And it's all pretty much all well water. So private wells and private oil and private gas for the most part. And solar. Some people do solar. But we have a big, humongous oil tank in our basement. We get oil deliveries to heat our house. You can heat your house with the mini splits to some degree, but yeah.
Around here, it gets a little too cold to really heat a house.
Yeah, it's supposed to augment at best. But so it's oil baseboard is what we've been doing, and it's, I don't know, it's $500 a year probably for shipments, and maybe sometimes we have to do two. And we've done a lot of work on the boiler. We've run new copper piping to it that had problems before that. We have an expansion tank for, you know, a hot water tank, all kinds of nice stuff, but the boiler itself, the oil boiler itself has been the same since we moved in. And every year they look at it and they go, yeah, there's some corrosion around the coil. And if you're going to replace the coil, you really should just replace this whole unit. And every year they go, but you'll be fine for another year. And they say that every year. This was the year they were like, you should replace that. And I said, oh, okay. You want to send somebody over to quote it? And then, so 2 days later, they had somebody quoting it. And he goes, like, yeah, this will be super easy. We can do it by next week. It'll be like $15,000. And I was like, holy crap. So,
yeah.
Oh, because they wanted to put in a cap on the chimney, because that was like straight out to the roof, and I was like, all right, you know, I got to do it, I guess. And and then I started talking around, and I was like, oh yeah, like people do gas, right? And then I'm like, well, of course we don't have gas on our street, but so I start looking into it, and you can have gas deliveries just the same.
Yeah, bottle gas, big bottle gas.
And then by the time you get their $2,000 rebate. So it's going to end up being a wall-mounted gas boiler that's teeny. They'll rerun all the piping and the expansion unit. They'll take out the oil burner, the oil tank, because they don't need that anymore. The chimney will no longer be needed. Yeah. And they'll run gas piping out to the outside, and we'll get propane deliveries. And it's the same price. It's the same goddamn price. As the whole, you know, and then there's the solar option, but I didn't really explore it much. Cause then I was like, well, you know, there's benefits to gas. Like then we could get that stainless steel gas stove if we wanted to, and to match the fridge. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm going all gas. Yeah.
Wow.
It's,
I've thought about this, you know, cause I always would love to have a gas stove. I think I would really enjoy it. And having gas fireplaces is really awesome. I mean, your house is a little small for that, so probably wouldn't be something that you have. But I've considered it. But you know, gas is still kind of a scary technology to me. You know, you get leaks, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I hear you.
So that's kind of shied me away a little bit. But
they're very careful with it, though. Like I was talking to the propane company and to the people who will install it, and there is a lot of compliance that goes into it. Like there's somebody coming tomorrow just to decide on the placement of the tank, because the tank can't be near the AC condenser and it can't. That's right. So,
yeah,
I've been learning a little bit about boilers, but gas, man, we're doing it. And the most exciting part is all that crap in the hallway and the unfinished basement side. All of that gets cleaned up.
Yeah, you're gonna get like additional square footage down there for sure.
I'd like to finish.
You could kind of eliminate any chimney problems too, which is a big thing. Yeah, that'd be nice. You know?
Not finish that side, but I'd like to, you know, there's like a bare wall and stuff. So there's some things to do there. I'd like to, you know, that divider between my kitchen and living room, I'd like to knock that down at some point. So there's cool stuff to be done with the house for sure.
Do you guys thought about any, like, you know, moving out of that house, or are you still happy with it? Still happy with the size of it?
I like the location. I like the house. I like the yard. I like that playground we put in there. I mean, there's just a million reasons to stay, I'd say. We paid it off.
Yep. Yeah.
There's just, you know, there's we have a neighbor who is selling her house, and if we bought it, we would own the whole corner. Like, we'd own, like, all the land up to the back there. And then, like, yep. if we had a parent or something that needed to live nearby, we could do that. So that's tempting. The problem is, like, I haven't even asked her what the price is, but I know
it's going to
be half a million or something. And it's like, no, fuck that.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
I mean, that's the, you know, because our house is now worth double what we paid for it. But, like, all that means is the only way that you can make money in a time like this is if you have another living situation already lined up for yourself or food.
Yeah. I mean, you're still going to need to buy a house if you sell a house. You know, that's the way it goes.
Or if you were downsizing, or if you were going to a condo or an apartment or something maybe. But so that's my exciting home repair stuff. And
wow. I mean, that's a big change for the oil. You know, that's like that's a big switch.
Yeah, and not one that, I mean, I went in thinking we were talking about mini splits, and I came out buying a gas, you know, converting my entire heating system. But it's just one of the, I don't know, in life, there are things that kind of linger around, and then, like, they come due.
Yeah. Yep.
What's been going on in your world? Anything?
Well, you know, not a whole lot. I've been playing some new games. I've been going through. I'm more on the Steam side of things. I don't do much in the console world anymore. Played a new game called Core Keeper, kind of a cute little world exploration game based underground. You know, kind of can play with a bunch of people, up to 8 people. I play with some friends online. Just recently finished playing a great game that I really like called Valheim, another Steam-based game, kind of a Nordic themed game where you go around and fight, you know, big Nordic monsters and can build really cool bases and stuff. You know, a lot of stuff like that. Really having a lot of fun, like,
have
fun
you see,
with that.
You see this Will Smith, Chris Rock stuff?
You know, this whole thing, it just feels like a way to get some attention back on the Oscars. That's what it feels like to me. It might as well be scripted.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has that effect, and I'm sure that there are cynical people that are in some ways happy that it happened, but it's certainly not good for the long-term health of the... I mean, at this point, nothing is good for the long-term health of the Oscars, and they are so up their own asses. I think they would way sooner drive themselves into ratings hell and into the ground than stage... I mean, it's abundantly clear, obviously, that it's not, that it wasn't staged, but... It reminded me of, like, remember when you were in high school and there would be some, like, really low IQ kid that would act out and, like, everybody would sort of have to tolerate it for a moment before someone ushered them away and you would, like, have difficulty for 5 to 10 minutes getting back to normal and then you could get back to normal.
Yeah.
It's like that on the grandest stage in the world.
It's so strange, isn't it? I mean, you know, the Oscars especially is kind of an interesting one because we used to kind of make a big deal out of the Oscars. You know, we used to watch all the movies and everything. And every year I kind of go back and take a peek at the nominations again. And it's just so like.
Remember we used to do snacks. You know, we would get a whiteboard and we would like.
It was a lot of fun. We had a great time doing it. And I kind of like, you know, I miss that. But I also, the Oscars aren't what they used to be. They're not the same thing. You know, movies aren't quite what they used to be.
Who are the assholes who let that happen? Like, because everybody has that experience. They're like, oh, I used to watch the Oscars and now I hate it. And nobody wants to do anything to improve it in the obvious direction.
Yeah, well, I think it's a unfortunate side effect of Hollywood. Some of the changes going on in Hollywood. Not to get too political down the political
road.
Let's
ruin our own industry. You know. Like very deliberately and blatantly. It's just so strange.
Yeah, they're just becoming too full of themselves. You know, that's what
it must be the bubble effect. But
just one little world, and they're increasingly the only ones in the bubble.
And they're like, oh, it's because of COVID. Like, it's not because of COVID. Nobody cares about COVID as much as you did.
What was that other big show, the award show that just has kind of disappeared? Was it the Golden Globes?
Probably. It's the one
they didn't even televise it this past year.
That's the one that really Ricky Gervais helped make it famous for the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, he was very entertaining on that. He was great.
I have a take on the Will Smith thing. Everybody's got a take. I got one that I haven't heard. You know, everybody's said everything, so I don't need to repeat it. But I got one that I haven't heard anybody say. What if Chris Rock had somehow dodged?
Oh, that would have been great.
Knew, like, if I'm doing this. A lot had to have been going through Will Smith's mind in those second weeks.
I can't imagine what was going through his mind.
Well, obviously he wasn't thinking. He wasn't planning this out. He was high on adrenaline. He was, you know, totally inappropriate. But nevertheless, despite all of that, he made a few decisions. And those decisions can't be accidental. One being slap instead of punch. Because if you punch and Chris Rock goes to the floor unconscious, and then
imagine
trouble. That, you know, like,
I mean, you're in real trouble anyway, but
a slap is a different, and it's been really interesting to listen to people be like, well, is a slap between two men who have a disagreement about a wife of truly violence? There's a lot of,
what is this? The 1800s?
I demand.
You've insulted my wife's
honor. I
demand
satisfaction.
Yeah.
So he clearly said, I better not kill this man.
Yeah.
And two, he knew if I'm going to do it, I better connect. Or else I'm going to look really fucking foolish.
Yeah.
And so that's like why he was sort of unassuming when he walked up to him to keep Chris guessing. And then he went extremely fast to make sure he connected.
Very strange. Yeah, I'm looking at the video of it. It just comes off so weird. You know, it's just
it's one
just
of those
bizarre
moments, like, in a highly mediated culture where you already know everything that's happening while you're watching it. Like, that was one of the most fascinating things of all, was something that to me was very clearly not scripted. You can just tell. I don't care how good the actors are. There's a difference between people who are acting and people who aren't. And if you've like lost touch with that, you might have lost touch with humanity. Yeah. But it was clearly like, oh, no. If anything, there are two things that were major giveaways. Because the slap itself could have still been a sketch. But Will Smith shouting from his seat and his like face, he's like clearly, he's getting a little teary and he can't calm himself down.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not acting. And then Chris Rock, one of the wittiest people on the planet, being sort of unable to recover.
Yeah. Didn't know how to like come out of it and like make a joke out of it.
Really,
you know,
well,
didn't know what to do.
He still was like, he had that like flub about the documentary thing or whatever. So of course, but it's to watch people be in denial, to be like, no. Something unpredictable and chaotic can't happen. It does remind me of,
do you really think the world is so controlled?
It's like when like a terrorist attack occurs, not to compare the two, but like, I remember when the Boston Marathon bombing happened, there is this weird half hour after you hear that it happened where nobody has the narrative yet. It hasn't, the story about it hasn't been constructed yet. All you know is that maybe something fucking terrible happened and you're kind of just like left. Everybody is left confused at the same time. And we have very, very rare moments where there's a period of time where the whole lot of us are confused. It's interesting, you know, cause almost, you know, everybody gets to work right. I remember I stayed up late that night watching this, you know, the view count tally up and watching the takes come in. And it was really interesting to see like, somebody would have a take that they thought was going to be popular and then they would take it down because they're like, oh, this isn't really gaining traction. Oh. Like,
try something
like
else.
At first it was like very popular to say like, they're both wrong. And then it was like, not very popular to say that. And you're like, oh, Will Smith wrong. And then, you know, I think if somehow Chris, and of course he could never have guessed that something so stupid would have happened. But, because I guess Will Smith is just a very troubled man. What would it take to do that?
I don't know. I mean, I know that, I don't follow gossip too much, but I know that him and his wife are having like bad trouble with that relationship. It's not in good shape. You know, there's deep problems in it. So that probably isn't helping the situation, I'm sure.
Bald wives.
That
was the other thing too, is like, more and more, it's like, don't joke about this. Don't joke about that. Hey, look who it is. Look who it is.
Oh, look who it is. Look who it is.
Is he really here?
Hello.
There's a visual.
Hi, I couldn't sleep, so.
We were just talking about Chris Smith and Will Rock.
Oh.
Chris Smith and Will Rock.
What a monumental event that was.
Yeah, I was just saying, if only Chris Rock could have somehow seen it coming and dodged, because would Will Smith actually chase him to get the slap in? I don't think he would.
There's a reason the internet is unpacking this for days, because it is, and we are sick of the memes at this point, but it is fascinating. You can't not think about this event, because it was just like such an impulsive, silly, stupid move that is like infinitely memeable, and every, like, the meme gods smiled upon us all when this happened. And like there was, and you couldn't like make it a weird like political thing with like they try to gin up some weird political thing, but it's harder because it's two black men just the joke teller and the person swinging the punch.
Yeah, the intersectionality is not very convenient.
It's not easy. They're trying, and there's definitely takes out there, and we
commend them for it.
Yeah, you know they have jobs. They have Twitter drama to spin up. You commend them, but it was an event. I couldn't believe it. I remember I like saw it on my Twitter feed. I'm like, I gotta look at this right now.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Facebook who I don't respect go, did Will Smith just slap Chris Rock? And I was just like, that whole sentence was funny to me, because like I wouldn't have expected something bizarre to happen with those two individuals in particular, and then like I didn't believe this person that would have happened, and I started looking into it and started, you know, and then we got on Discord and had a gay old time.
There is more to be mined from this event, because every day there's some new twist on the meme. That is, some of them are more cruel than others, and I get a kick out of those. But
add to it that they're both I haven't seen a lot of people talk about this. They're both like figures from the 90s. It really is like if like Jason the Red Power Ranger slapped like Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles. Like, what are my childhood? I mean, I think both of their best days are behind them, right?
Yeah, and there was that one clip of like somebody merged Chris Rock at the Nickelodeon Awards, movie awards, or whatever they are, the Kids' Choice Awards, and they mixed it with the Oscar footage. There's so many different avenues for that.
And then the fact that he then 15 minutes later wins Best Actor, the most prestigious award of all, he goes up there and weeps for a bit and
with a standing ovation. He just assaulted somebody, and he gets standing ovation.
But they're all living in a fucking movie.
It's bizarro.
To me, like. This idea that we should all weigh in on a take, I'm like, I've never, and I know you feel the same way, EJ, and probably John, I've never seen anything more clear. It's like, you made a joke that was not offensive, and then you overreacted. I mean, look, I understand that it's something that she's sensitive about. Therefore, you could say it's offensive, but
it's not even the greatest joke, but it's an Oscar, you know, event worthy joke. You know, it's like, well,
in a world of like, hey,
jokes.
Let's roast these people, it ain't that bad. And so he assaults him, and I would expect in any sane world they'd come over and they'd say, we're sorry, Mr. Smith, we have a no violence policy here, of course, and you also just did that on public television, so we're gonna need to ask you to leave. And then he, of course, would not be part of the award ceremony later, because he just assaulted somebody in front of millions. And then like maybe a little old lady would come out for 10 seconds and she would be like, Will Smith will not be participating in tonight's awards. Thank you. And that would be I would just think that that's what would happen. Right. Yeah,
that's what normally would happen. But we don't. But especially Hollywood lives in a just crazy, because everything's appearances. So they have to overthink everything.
Yeah.
And I don't I think it short circuited them completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what happened, is like they just didn't know how to adapt to the situation in any kind of way. So they could only continue with what they were doing. That was the only option.
It's like a conspiracy that happened in front of everybody.
Yuck. And nobody cared. Everybody just kept going about their day. It wasn't bad enough to shut it down, so we just keep going.
They're still, like, supposed to be the arbiters of, like, morality and all that, so you're just like, it's just super confusing.
It matters very, like, I remember when I first saw the clip of him laughing and her not, I was like, oh, that's the important clip, because he definitely heard the joke, he definitely laughed, he's definitely in a good mood, his body language is completely relaxed. Her mood shifts entirely. It cuts away, so we never get to see him go like, babe, you mad, babe? We never get to see that. All we see is like, I'm taking action immediately. We've all been there
where it's like, maybe you hear a joke that maybe you should laugh at it, and you look to your wife. It's like, eh.
Or I've definitely been with friends who have not the best significant others, and like, yeah, he's having a good time, and then he notices she's not having a good time, and he has to kind of like get into her vibe.
Yeah, temper it at least. Temper the good time.
Well, so, that's. Mm-hmm. I covered it. I wasn't going to talk about Moon Knight because you weren't here, but should we talk quickly about Moon Knight?
Yeah, let's. I mean, there's not really that much to talk about.
No. Why wouldn't they just hire, if they're going to do, like, he's an awkward guy from London who's kind of awkward, like, why wouldn't they just hire Stephen Merchant or somebody to be this character?
It's the thing is, it's like a bunch of different personalities, right?
Yeah, true.
So it's,
they need somebody versatile.
Yeah, I mean it's fine. It is goofy. This is the first Marvel thing that feels like a TV show. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, yeah, the rest of them just feel like bloated, overlong Marvel movies. And this is like right off the bat, it feels more not like CW level, but more like. I don't know. They started doing like a few like high class Marvel shows for FX, like a
cable
and stuff.
TV show.
There's like Heroes. Remember like Heroes in like on Fox. It was kind of cinematic, but it was still like TV. This feels like that.
I get you.
It
felt very superhero to me.
Yeah,
An unsuspecting man is thrust into a threat and must discover the power within.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was another show. What was it? It was Legion. Legion. It was FX Legion. And it has like a kind of like a multiple personality superhero. I think it's kind of tangentially related to X-Men. Because Doctor.
In that period of time where they were making X-Men content that wasn't quite X-Men.
Yeah, and like, so new movies. Yeah, and that was it's kind of I thought that was probably a better, more artsy portrayal of this kind of story of a superhero like with multiple personalities, I'll probably keep watching it because.
It's Marvel. When there was a scene in it where he thinks it's Wednesday and it's actually Friday and he's going crazy. He's like, excuse me, ma'am, what day is it? Or whatever. Like he's lost track of like 2 days. And it just made me think for a minute. I was like, isn't it funny that the 7 days of the week are so important to us that it's a sign of insanity if you fucking lose track of which one you're on? Like, I think if you had to if you had to keep track of 1 through 7, you're like, oh, is today 5 or 6? You probably would lose track. But somehow having like the days of the week, I don't know. Like, it's considered like a sign of insanity.
That part definitely stressed me out because like that's like my nightmare to like wake up on like I don't know a Monday thinking it's a Friday. But
isn't that like the most typical nightmare of all? Is like. You're like, oh my God, it's somehow mid semester and I haven't gone to this thing. I still have that dream.
I was in theater, so I always have the same dream where I find out I'm in a play. I don't know any of the lines and the play is happening like right as we speak and I have to go on stage.
Oh God.
It's a, I have that dream all the time. And, yeah.
What do you do in the dream? You just try to hack it?
I try to hack it. Like I'm like in the, like behind the stage, like just memorizing these nonsense lines from dreams.
So have you ever been on stage where you know all your lines and your scene partner, you realize they're forgetting their line? And you have to, like, figure out a way to get them back on track without calling attention to the situation. That's happened to me once or twice.
Yeah, I can't think of a... I was, like, into improv and stuff, too. So I was always pretty good at moving people along in scenes.
I had one where like, I basically had to kind of do his line. And there's a moment where you're like, maybe he's just doing a really long dramatic pause here. And I don't want to, like, I don't want to throw, like, a totally wrong line at him just to kind of like throw it to him, but I did it and then we got it back on track without any waves, and I remember it feeling so good. I was like, wow, we just righted that ship without anybody knowing.
Yeah, that happened actually. That happened to me where I forgot a line and somebody else did my line back to me to like get me back on track. So it has happened to me, but that was for a special show because we I used to do these things called 24-hour film or play festivals where you write and produce and act in a festival like in one day. And yeah, that's just really tough. So with less
I was thinking with Moon Knight, it better connect into something. Here's what I don't need. Another one of these, like, did you know that in the background there was yet another superhero going on?
Yeah.
This one has it needs to connect to Eternals or to give me like one of these new things they've been doing. Give me something. Start to maybe Shang-Chi, build something with me here.
Yeah. And, you know, Poe Dameron, he's doing his, he seems like he's in it. You know, he's doing something. Yeah. I don't really feel there's a couple interesting sequences like the, you know, where you never see the action, the cool action he's doing. Cause he's like falling asleep or whatever. And then the personality takes over. So when all the like really cool bloody action happens, he's like asleep, quote unquote, in the body. Those are some cool sequences, but I like the aura that Ethan Hawke is exuding in this show.
He's interestingly cast.
But other than that, I didn't really care for like the like I don't know museum store banter, and I'm just I'm done.
Done with yeah. I'm
I don't need simple. Like to I don't really care about whatever this the Kinder egg that they're trying to grab, or I don't even know.
But it's good for me because they come out on Wednesdays and I got to go into the office on Wednesdays, and I always want to wake up a little bit early and work out, and I often am like, no, sleep is better. But if I know that, like, oh, I'll get to at least just watch that stupid Marvel show for an hour, and then I'll be able to, like, if I go into the office and they're talking about it, I'll then know. So it kind of gets my ass up, which is, you know, like, is that worth something? Is that worth the? Oh, this is actually, here, we'll end on this note. I was thinking about, I didn't have cable when I was a kid. Did you guys have cable when you were a kid?
Not until pretty far along, like when I was 14.
Yeah, on and off.
We had UHF, yeah. So we had, you know, the Fox channel, the Fox affiliate, you know, like that sort of thing. But we didn't have Nickelodeon. We didn't have, certainly not HBO, obviously, but we didn't have, you know, like Turner Classics and whatever the fuck else people got on cable back then. And I would always get it in a hotel, and my sister would be like, this, you can finally watch Nickelodeon. She would like, you know, like tantalize me with Nickelodeon. Because that's what everybody at school was talking about, Doug and Ren and Stimpy and the stuff that I didn't know anything about. MTV, too, of course. So, like, the Viacom channels. And I was just, I was thinking, like, it's funny because my parents couldn't have given a fuck, like, if we missed out on entire cultural events. Like, they had no element of FOMO. There was no element of, like, everybody's going to be talking. You know, that would even go for, like, like if The Lion King came out in theaters and everybody's going to see The Lion King, yeah, we would maybe see it if there was a second run and if it was wicked convenient and it was on a day off. But we would not rush to the theater the weekend that it opened. Most of my taste came from VHSs. Like if I got the VHS for a birthday or something, and so
There was like second run theaters that would like show like movies way later for like $2 or something.
Yeah, that was $2. Way to go. Yeah. But I was thinking, I was like, what's the equivalent of that now for the streaming platforms? What's the one that if, because you could get Netflix, you could get HBO Max, you can get Peacock, you can get Paramount Plus, you can get Disney Plus. But is there one that you're going to have the most FOMO if you don't get it? It seems like it's Disney Plus.
Yeah.
It's the essential one.
It's almost automatic for me, even though like.
With the Verizon. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, well, yeah, but I tend to watch it a lot. HBO Max is the other one, so those are basically my two I watch.
But like I imagine that it wouldn't be weird for a kid, for a teenager or for a kid to not have HBO Max and not catch the, you know. Hmm. But like, whereas like if you're missing Pixar, if you're missing Marvel, if you're missing Star Wars, if you're missing Disney movies, like you're pretty out, you know, Fox now, you're pretty out of the loop.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Disney's still the king of children's entertainment, yeah, for sure. You know,
we saw it turning red, you know. Oh, my kids watched it three times. Oh, that Pixar movie.
Yeah, I forgot that. I remember there was a lot of like headlines, like, you know, like, I don't know, from all sides, like, is this like so, this is too horny of a movie, or like, it's not horny enough. It's there was all sides were mad that there was some level of horniness that was inappropriate.
That wasn't quite right.
Too horny, not horny enough. I don't know. I know nothing about the movie.
My kid's four, so you know, most of it's over her head. But there's this part towards the end where they're doing like a Chinese ritual to try to extract the red panda out of her, and like Gloria's been walking around the house like doing the Chinese ritual. She'll start like chanting like sounds that basically sound like what they were saying in Mandarin.
Hope she doesn't do that. Yeah, I don't know.
It's not my favorite Pixar movie. I'll say that much. It wasn't that bad, but it wasn't my favorite. Coco, for my money, like that's I've recommended that to John a few times because I think the music is you know, it's the Lopez's there. We talked about Encanto without you, John. That was, we were supposed to have done an Encanto discussion.
Yeah, but that was that time.
But I think it, yeah, you know, it's. Needless to say, this Encanto hasn't gone anywhere. Everybody's still loving those songs.
Still around. I hear that song everywhere now. I hear all the like Bruno radio, song? You know.
I think,
yeah. Still like difficult
I think
to believe.
My favorite song might be, you know, the one that's like Bring It In, Bring It In. Good Talk, Bring It In, Bring It In.
That's a great song. Yeah. My favorite's the Family Madrigal, the opener.
That's very good.
That's my favorite.
You had said something clever, which you were like, I was watching it and loving the music and loving what it was doing, and I was kind of hoping it wasn't Lin-Manuel Miranda because I wanted to believe that there's more talent in the world.
Yeah, I was hoping that, like, because it didn't feel exactly like his stuff because he did write it with someone, but I was kind of hoping, like, oh, can we have someone else? So there's two people, but no.
And there weren't, like, really any celebrity voices. I mean, there was, like, John Leguizamo, but, like, I was thinking it's kind of funny how at this point, much like the IP is the celebrity in like a Marvel movie at this point. You don't have to book a celebrity to be in a Marvel movie to sell it. You know, Chris Hemsworth was not a major celebrity when they cast him as Thor, for instance. Much the same way, like you don't need to have John Travolta play anybody in the movie. Like you can have voice actors do it as long. The star now really is the music. It's like, I think after Let It Go, they were like, oh, come on, let's just hire up these Broadway guys and have these songs.
They realized.
Yeah, it was a good move because I didn't really care much for that movie, but that music sticks with you.
Yeah, it's good music. Let's give it to the poor guy. Poor Lin-Manuel.
I don't think he's poor. I think he's doing fine.
All right, that's all I got. John, thanks for filling in for EJ here. You know, sometimes EJ needs to put up his boundaries. And he needs to exercise his boundaries, and he did that tonight. And then he came to us anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling well, so I laid down and I couldn't sleep. And I like saw that you started a studio. I'm like, I feel better now.
Yeah. So what's the story? You're just feeling fatigued?
Or yeah, what? Just lots of exhaustion. You know, just general exhaustion of having two kids under five and a, you know,
I hear you.
And a YouTube
channel. Maybe we'll all see each other on Saturday if we're lucky.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I caught you know, you probably caught me coughing a little during it, but not too much.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Damn it. I'm going to D.C. after that. I'm going to Washington, D.C. the following week. I don't know why exactly. Something to do with...
I don't know. I don't know if you want to deal with a potential cold during that.
Do you think that you're contagious and I would get a cold?
It still feels like I'm not quite to that point yet. I can't say. I'm just... I know everyone hates colds, and I don't want anybody to be colded, so... But I feel well enough. Let's just put it that way.
All right, we'll think about this. We'll think long... Because we certainly can't give little Noah a cold either.
No. We'll see. We'll see.
No.
All right. I'll talk to you guys. Thanks for joining. Red Cow Arcade.